Marriage of the Seed is the book. This is episode number 2 of the podcast. I apologize for the delay. We were supposed to release an episode last week, and I had some computer trouble. And I'm an IT guy, too, so I had to order a part. Yada, 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 got fixed. We're all good. Mom is sitting in front of me today, ready to go. Episode 2, we're actually going to start breaking down the book. Last episode, we were talking about the logistics, why you did it, and how it got done. Mom, how's it going?
Oh, it's going fine, Keith. I'm glad to be here once more, talking to all your fans.
Not my fans, it's your fans. Well, they're following you. I mean, they bought your book, they read your book, they love your story.
It's all new to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we're doing this like one-on-one thing and doing podcasting now and you releasing a book that you were sitting on for 30 years like we talked about last episode. Apparently, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about this now, but you apparently have a radio interview coming up.
Yes, I certainly do.
You excited for that?
Very excited.
Yeah.
But I'm not nervous. I don't get overexcited about these things. We're all people. So I can't wait, though. I'm looking forward to it.
That's good. Okay, Mom, we're going to break down chapter 1, and that's family. You start off talking about your childhood, how you're raised.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, you talked about how you had big dreams. My whole childhood, I was known as a dreamer, but you don't really go more in depth with that. I'm curious, like, what dreams did you have? Can you give me some examples?
Well, I was also what you call like a daydreamer. For example, the teacher would be ratting off a story in class and that. I would get bored with certain things and go off into my own little world. So, daydreamer, and then having dreams, well, that's another thing. I did have big dreams. I wanted to be a series of a lot of things, but a lot of them were helping people, working with children. As a nurse, pediatric world, that's what I really wanted to do. And it didn't come to pass, but I had my own children I was looking after, so in one way, I had part of those dreams come true.
You also mentioned, start talking about your parents, and you mentioned how both of them work.
Yes.
Okay. That, and correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that kind of unheard of at the time? Like, traditionally in the 40s or the 50s, the man would be the breadwinner, the woman would stay home, take care of the kids. Walk me through that, because that seems very unorthodox for the time.
Well, what happened, my dad had a wonderful job, the CNR, and we were renting a place somewhere. He wanted us to have our own home. And he built one in the country for us. But this all cost money, which in those days, times were hard.
Right.
So my mom took a job at night. But we always had one parent, usually, in the house. My mother worked at night. She worked she had some nursing training. She worked in the Douglas Hospital, I remember. And my dad worked for the CNR in the day. And every summer, my mother took off, and I spent all summers with my mom. It was a good life, a wonderful life.
Okay, so it was more of having a bunch of kids, wanting to get ahead, I guess. I remember you telling me, you know, you never went without, but it's not like you guys lived an extravagant life either, right?
No.
So it was just to be comfortable, I guess?
Yes. My dad always this way had a car, a country house, and we were always dressed. I had hand-me-downs from my sisters, but we were well-dressed, and we always ate well. We never went hungry, this I'll say.
Right.
But there was not an extra money for college fund or all of this. They didn't have much of that.
Okay. You mentioned in the book, too, at the beginning that you were very lonely, or you felt lonely when you were a child.
Yes.
Do you think that might be in part because both your parents worked and you never really had the attention of them?
That could be, because I treasured the times my dad used to read me stories at night. You talk to anybody, and that was not a special thing. It was what they expected from their parents. But my dad working all day and spending a half an hour different nights reading, because my mother was at work, I treasured every time I had with them, which was not a lot of time. My mother would sleep until noon, and I was in a nursery for a short time when I was 4 and 5 while she work some days. So, yes, there was a lot of time I didn't have to spend with my parents. So this is where, in between, I did get lonely. Because my sisters didn't bother with me much. They were older. And there was a big gap between me and my younger brother, 9 years. So I was a sort of in-between child.
Interesting you mentioned you brought up your dad in the reading. Because that was something significant that I remember reading. That, like, he was reading fables to you.
Yes,
and it's the way you spoke, you really enjoyed.
That seems
to have been one of the moments of your childhood that you remember.
That's right. That's right.
But you don't really talk a lot about these kind of moments with your mom. How was the relationship with your mom? Was it more distant? Do you feel closer to your dad?
I did. My mom was, she gave me good advice, but she was more cold. We were very, maybe when we were babies, I don't remember, she hugged us. I don't remember a lot of kissing or hugging. When I had one of my children at the hospital, she'd come, like, give me a little kiss on the forehead, and I thought that was so wonderful, because I didn't get that much.
She wasn't very affectionate with you?
No, not at all. I had dolls, and I was always kissing my dolls. There was something missing there all the time for me for that.
How about your dad? Was he affectionate at all?
When he was around, yeah, but not like that. You wouldn't get to sit on his knee, or there was nothing like that.
Right.
He would bring me for a sundae sometime, bring me for ice creams, but that's the way he showed us his affection.
He read to you.
Stuff like they mended our shoes.
Right.
He would cut our hair.
Right.
That was, to him, affection. And I think that's the way they were raised, too. They told me so. It was not hugging and loving. The families were different years ago, he told me. They've started work very young, and they were out of the house young, too, and married young.
You talk about your childhood memories, but I noticed that you didn't really talk a lot about any memories when you were younger about your siblings. It seems like you went straight to, like, talking about your quote-unquote summer flings with these American boys and stuff. How was the relationship like with your brothers and sisters? You just talked about it quickly, like there was an age gap and you weren't very close, but, like, particularly with Rosie, I'm noticing a bit of, like, some jealousy there or something. What's with that?
Well,
you weren't close with them, or?
Well, I was only close with I had to mind my younger sister. There was 13 years difference. I had to babysit her. I was like her mother while my mother worked in a diner.
Were you ever resentful of that?
Yes. Because I wanted, that was my dating. I wanted to start dating. I was a teenager.
Didn't like the fact that?
Oh, she got on my nerves something terrible. And she was spoiled.
Right.
But my brother, who was 9 years younger, I get along well with him, but not that much in common.
But, like, you don't have any stories of, like, going out, doing stuff, causing trouble, or,
older sister, I think about good memories.
Okay.
She would sneak me into the movie theater. She had to be 21 in those days. She'd make me
Hold on. 21 to go to a movie?
Yes.
What were you watching? Porno? Like, what?
No. She made me look 21, believe me, with these trench coats, and I was tall for my age.
Okay.
We put in false boobs and all of the really
this whole
funny.
Elaborate scheme to go watch a movie.
Oh, yes. She brought me in the theaters with her, and she did so much for me like I should have had from my mother, you might say. Her name is Helen, and today we're still the closest of friends because she was like a mother to me. Yeah.
And the other siblings, no good memories to talk about?
Not that many.
Okay.
Just say.
Was it like just a cultural thing? Like, walk me through it. Because you seem like, not to say that your family was cold.
They were.
But maybe just culturally just wasn't, maybe it's an Eastern European thing. Like, they're just not overly affectionate.
But to me.
You know what I mean?
That was a good life because I say it, that's all I knew. There was no violence.
Yeah.
There was none of that saw with my marriage with Ken. There was nothing like that.
Right.
And when my dad and mother, when he got mad, he'd just look at the ceiling and go for a walk or something.
So there was never a raising of the voice hitting or nothing like that?
Nothing. So that's why I say it was a good childhood, because I don't have any of those bad memories. None.
You say in your teens you wanted to be a nun.
Yes, very
much. You don't really go into the motivation of why. Because Your family doesn't seem overly religious.
No.
Walk me through why the church thing, and did you ever go into depth, like talk to your family about it? Did your family know that you were so passionate about the church?
The only one I used to tell was my mom.
Okay.
And she got really, not angry, but she was very annoyed that I wanted to waste my life in a convent.
She saw it as a waste.
Oh, totally. Okay. Totally.
What was the trigger for you? Like, you read the Bible and you're like, this is for me?
No,
like,
not reading the Bible. It was all my teachers were nuns. And it was the nuns that I had met were such wonderful women. And they brought out so much emotion in the classroom and love. And it wasn't all just about preaching about the Bible. It was just about life. They'd stay after hours and help you with your homework, and they devoted their life, and I wanted to be like them. And
was it because you had love from them that you didn't have at home?
I think so. Yeah. When I look back, definitely. And there was one sister there that, she gave me, I was in an acting class, and she used to tutor me, and she was just wonderful. And I think she was a big influence on my decision. So when I told the convent I wanted to go in, the head one came to visit my mom. And my mother, she did everything but throw her out of the house. It was not very nice. And, soon after, I had met Ken and I changed my mind. Yeah.
So the hormones start to kick in.
Oh, yes.
Around 15.
Oh, yes.
And because you really go in depth about, summer flings and all this. But quick thing. Talk to me about this whole dating scene in the 40s where the parents have to come during the date. What the hell is that about?
Oh, the time I wrote about my first boyfriend?
Yeah, is, from what you wrote, is a common occurrence back in the 50s.
13, 14, if that. And my first boyfriend's mother was collecting these dishes at the Bowl Theater. So first of all, she had the car to pick me up. Was a little bit away, the theater. She had the money to pay for the movie.
Hold on. Did your mom know you're going on
a... No. I would have never been allowed to go.
On a date at all?
No. Not until I was around 15 was I permitted to date.
So how did you get around that? What was the plan?
It was an afternoon thing, and she knew I usually headed out to one of my girlfriend's houses. So I lied and said I was going to my girlfriend's, and off I went to the movie with Brian and his mother.
But didn't Brian's mother know to maybe call your mom?
No, we didn't even have a telephone, Keith.
Okay.
And I don't think they had one either.
You have an emergency. How do you call your friend? Would you send a pigeon?
You'd
run across the street.
I remember there was an emergency once with my younger brother. He was ill. Someone ran all the way from 1st to 3rd Avenue, and then my aunt called the doctor.
Okay.
That's the way it worked.
Nobody had a phone.
Well, unless you run to a neighbor or somebody. My aunt had a phone, we knew, and she had contacts with doctors. So that's the way you lived. It was better than the horse and buggy day, I must say.
Oh, yeah, obviously, yeah.
Yes.
So, no funny business happening on that movie, right? Because Brian's mother's right there.
I know he wanted to hold my hand. He'd just give me a smile, and he looked up at his mother.
You can't even hold the hand.
No, because she kept staring at him and me. No. I sat on one side of her, and he sat on the other.
Oh, so she was in the middle.
Yes.
How is that a date?
Well, to me, I was 13, 12. That's a date at that age.
And right.
It was a sneaky date, but it was a date. Because when we were alone, he used to kiss me and that. I like that.
Okay. Well, how'd you get past the mother, though? If the mother's right there, how do you...
Oh, no. Those times when he was kissing me at the park and that, she was never around.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
No.
Okay.
No.
And do you remember what the movie was?
No. I don't remember, but I just remember the dishes, her and Brian. That's all I remember.
And what came of Brian? Anything?
Yeah, he stopped coming around because I had moved from Verdun to Point St. Charles, and he found a girlfriend on the same street across the street. And I was upset, but I got over it.
Oh, so it was a long-distance relationship, so you were on the next street. It was too far.
I was too far away, you know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if the guy's not going to walk a couple blocks to go see you, it's probably not worth it, right?
No, he had to walk a lot more. And if you walked, he had to take a bus.
Right.
So that was
Okay, so screw that. Just go to the girl across the street,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. you're dating a couple of guys in the summer, these American flings, as you call it. And then that ends up with spending a night at Carol's house. Carol has a photo of a good-looking guy on her dresser. And you ask, who's this? The term you refer to as a dreamboat.
Oh, yes. I remember that first picture I saw of Kenny on top. It was on top of her television. Yes, I remember that.
Walk me through that that feeling.
I said, who is this dreamboat? She said, that's my cousin. I said, oh, I'd love to meet him. Well, she said, he's engaged. There's no sense you meeting him. He's engaged to somebody. I said, engaged? I said, that's not married. That's maybe I could still meet him. I said.
Okay, so my mom's a homewrecker.
I guess.
Is it just back in the day, engagement wasn't a thing, nobody cared? Or is it just your hormones took over and you said, well, I don't care?
It wasn't as serious as it's taken, as it was taken later on in years. It was more like, I think they treated engagements of the people I knew like a friendship ring. Like, I mean, this girl
pretty
was
serious
like
friendship
14,
ring,
15 years old. I was young too, but I was older in my thinking. And
you're wiser beyond your years.
Way. That's what I think, because I had older
sisters.
How old
was his fiancée at the time?
Oh, 14 or 15. It didn't make any
I mean, you think at the time, you know, I think of my niece Jordan, 15, you know, getting married. Like, what? That just makes no sense.
This girl he was engaged to used to go to church with his mother and sister. She was like, it didn't seem like a fiancée, the whole situation. Okay?
And even, to you, yeah, because you wanted to jump this guy's bones. That's
well,
why.
Not. I didn't think of that right away.
Okay.
That came later.
But I mean, okay, you're the one that's courting this guy. This is unheard of in 1950, whatever. Women don't do that, right? I mean, what's with this alpha female mentality? It seems like you're the one being the aggressive party. Whereas I'm assuming the stereotypical 1950s, it's like the men approach, not the woman.
But all I said was meet him. I said to myself, if he tells me he's engaged and in love with this girl, of course I would have said, nice meeting you, goodbye. But it didn't turn out that way.
Right.
He was not really in love with this girl from what he told me.
Right. Okay.
And he broke it off. To me, I figured then he's meant for me.
I want to bring you back to a first date and something that resonated with me. And I'll quote from the book. To my astonishment, he slapped me right back. I yelled at him and said I wasn't that kind of girl. Ken told me he knew that he could sense it as well. But if I ever laid hands on him again, our relationship would be over. I was totally stunned and didn't say a word. He slaps you that first date. How do you react to that?
I was shocked. I didn't know really how to react. All I knew is he was the first boy that ever did touch me down in my privates. And
right.
That was my just first reaction to let him know I was not going to sleep with him. Wasn't going to. I was a virgin and I wasn't going to go that way. My first reaction was just slap him. But him slapping me back was another shock. Like, maybe I had no right to slap him. Maybe I should have just taken his hand away.
So your initial reaction to him slapping you
was just a shock.
Was making you second guess slapping him.
Yes.
Not like, who the heck is this guy?
No. Maybe I should have just taken his hand away and talked to him.
Big cultural change nowadays, eh? I mean, something like that happens, that guy goes to jail for that.
I know. But in those days, a man, I don't think, ever went to jail for that. Ever.
I mean, as we're going to go through this book, we're going to hear some crazy stuff and you trying to get help from police, from and them not either not believing or not listening to. So it's some of the stuff we're going to hear, it nowadays makes no sense.
That's right.
But it's just the big cultural shift. And I think that the slapping thing mentioned earlier, you never experienced any kind of violence in your life,
ever,
right?
Ever.
So something like that being such a big shock for you made you question, instead of saying, who is this guy? How dare he do this? Your instant reaction was to question your own actions. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
The second date Ken and I went on, we were driving around. We always ended up eating at a restaurant, which he always paid for. The odd thing occurred on that date. He asked me what I would say to him if he asked me to marry him. I, of course, told him, ask me and you'll find out. Ken didn't say anything after that. He just smiled. Date two.
Yes.
Date two, he's asking you that. Is this a common thing when you're younger at that age? Or is this just...
I fell in love with him right away.
Instantly. Even after him slapping you.
Yes. I think just seeing him that first, coming up my stairs, not ringing the bell, me seeing him...
It was a physical attraction.
Oh my!
Specifically,
to me, the biggest compliment he ever could have given me. But I said, I gotta just lay low here, be careful, and say, "Well, ask me." Oh, I wanted him to ask me.
That second date.
Oh yes, yes.
It's not obvious. It's not too fast. It's a second date.
Love at first sight. Way I felt.
Now, going back earlier to talking about your parents and you kind of not feeling you don't get a lot of love from them, do you think that initial attraction was not just the physical, but you wanting, longing for that companionship and then finally seeing perhaps that ray of light and that you bring all that emotion of what you're missing, you felt you're missing in life? As well as that attraction, do you think that had something to do with it?
I believe so. Now that I look back, I really believe it had a lot to do with it. To me, I had a great childhood, but that's all I knew. Being well-fed and being cared of, but physical love, that didn't exist in my house. It had to be something so unusual that you'd get a hug or a kiss, maybe Christmas time, or you got excellent marks in school that month. Other than that, there was no physical love whatsoever.
You then write, I found out later that week that Ken broke off his engagement with his fiance. That's 2 weeks into dating you?
I don't know exactly how long, but it wasn't that long after.
We dated for about a year and then he proposed. 16 years old and I was engaged.
Yes.
That just sounds wrong. Nowadays, anyways. But like you said, back at that time, that was... normal.
Well, my mom was married at 16, a year younger than me, so...
Right. 16 years old and I was engaged. It was every woman's dream at the time. Ken proposed to me on my birthday.
Yes. You weren't dating or getting married before in your mid-20s. You were an old maid already.
Mid-20s, you're done.
You're right.
You're over the hill.
You're an old maid.
Women are 40 and they're just starting now.
I know. That must be
mind-blowing for you, eh? Such a difference?
If you finished high school, you were, some brain. Now you've got to go through university before you're...
Before you work at McDonald's.
Yeah, it's totally changed. Everything.
All right. I want to talk about Gwen Marshall.
Wow.
So Gwen Marshall... is a person you've never met?
Never.
Was apparently a friend of Ken's.
That's what he said.
So Ken, according to Ken, a friend of Ken's used to model, was in love with him.
Yes.
But it was only platonic between him and her.
That's what he said.
And she was very wealthy?
Yes. They used to go horseback riding and...
Did you ever see a photo of her?
Yes, but it looked like something cut out of a magazine book. You know that type of paper?
Right.
And
any photo ever between the two of them?
Never.
Okay.
Never.
So he would like carry around this kind of magazine clipping or photo?
Yes, from the magazine. But being a model, I believe she could be in a magazine. And what's wrong with that? I believed it.
And how long did he say he knew her for? And how long did he talk about her?
He talked about her, not every day, but here and there when we would have an argument, saying how lucky I was to have him instead of her. And
right.
It's always to push my button. Like,
to antagonize you.
Yes, to make me feel I was so lucky to be his wife. And he was feeding me and supporting me. And whereas... But he could never marry another woman with money. He wanted to be the big shot in the family.
Right.
And
so Gwen Marshall's made up, right?
I believe so. Yeah. I really believe because the stories he came with they never made
any
sense.
Give me a couple of examples of stuff he would say about her.
Apparently, at one point, he heard she died. And the letter we received that he inherited all of her fortune. Again, I believe that was made up by a printer. Went to a printing company. Right. And one of his friends was a printer, by the way. So that could have been made up right there, thinking back. And she was thrown off a horse, and he wanted to go down to Florida to shoot the horse. I mean, and none of this made any sense. And he went down to see about his, then he got a letter from a lawyer talking about his inheritance. Again, he had to go down to Florida to find out. So we were in a not too good relationship, me and him. So he figured, I think if he was going to inherit all this money, I would cool it. And just be better to him and whatever.
So, Gwen Marshall, what do you think he made this fictitious person up? It obviously was part to rile you up, maybe part to keep you in for those reasons. But, well, like, do you think it's a question of him just not liking his life and wanting it to be more exciting, so he made stuff up to make himself sound better?
No, because now that I think back and thought back, he obviously was cheating on me.
Right.
And this was always an excuse, checking on his inheritance, this and that.
To go to Florida.
Yeah, when she was sick in the hospital before she died, to take off with one of his girlfriends.
Yeah.
I believe that. Because we had a phone call once, I did, from the airline, saying the ticket was okay for Mr. and Mrs. Robinson, and I wasn't booked on any plane with him, so this right. was obviously,
yeah.
you know, I caught him in a lot of things like this.
Right.
And when I caught him with it, of course, he covered his ass right away. He said, oh, no, 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 that idiot made a mistake. I'm going to call her. So he would call and tell somebody off. But I believe his finger was on the button the whole time. I don't believe he was talking to anybody. All the time, there was an excuse. I never really caught him.
You never had the smoking gun?
No.
Ever.
Until
they, well, we're jumping the gun here.
Further along
But Gwen Marshall, there was never a smoking gun with Gwen Marshall.
I believe that was a made-up person to cover all the excuses along the line.
But there's part of you.
I do believe
there's part of you at like 16, you know, at a young age that believes part of it. And that's just, is that the naive 16-year-old that wants to believe it's so bad that you convince yourself that it's true?
I did want to believe it because I didn't want to lose him. I didn't want to lose the man I fell in love with.
Right.
And this was not the man anymore. This man was changing.
You were holding on to a dream of what you thought was...
Maybe he'll change. Maybe there's something wrong there.
Yeah.
He doesn't appreciate. Maybe he'll realize, but he just got worse.
I want to talk about the hat.
Oh, the hat. The famous hat.
Ken's ex-fiance's church hat was sitting on a shelf in their house. How did you come about this hat? When you confronted him, what happened? Talk to me about the hat.
Well, I saw this hat when I went to his house. I used to quite go there a lot. His mom would make supper for us. And I saw this hat there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the girl's name was Leona. I said, what is Leona's hat doing here? You're not with her anymore. So I asked the mother. Nobody knew anything. But then I was told, he investigated, he was yelling at his mother and his sister and that it was Leona's hat, and she just forgot it there. She just forgot the hat there, because she was still, even though he broke off with her, she was still going to church with Kenny, his mother and sister.
So he was still getting it on with her.
Who knows?
What do you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to believe any of it.
No, that's it. You wanted to hold on to...
I didn't want to believe in any of it.
But, okay, now in hindsight, I mean, I hate to be like the I told you so guy, right? Because, you know, we're going to talk about this later on, but, you know, if you would have dumped this guy's ass early, I wouldn't be here right now. So,
I know.
Out of self-interest, I appreciate you staying on as long as you did. But, you know, with hindsight being 20/20, you're going after, and just as the initial here, you're going after a guy who just broke off an engagement to get with you. You don't say to yourself, well, if this guy's going to break off an engagement to get with me, what's he going to do to me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? No, I but is it just you're 15,
yeah.
your hormones are raging, you're in love, you see this guy, you don't give a shit.
I don't even think of that side of it.
Right. It's all hormones at that point, and you don't care.
Now that I think, he was probably cheating on me from day one all the time. If not, he changed women.
Right.
Along the line.
So talk to me about that incident, about the hat, because he drove her home.
Oh, yes. One day she had finished coming from church and she was still at the house when we walked in. So he said, "How are you getting home, Leona?" She says, "I don't know." "Okay, I'll drive you home." She comes out. I'm in the front seat of the car and he opens he's asked me to open the door for her. And I said, "No, I will not open the door for her." So he opened the door. He was so angry at me that...
He hit you.
Again, I let it pass. We had a little spat after he drove me home. We didn't talk for a few days and that, but then it all passed. I forgave him.
Did you question your reaction to it? Did you say that you overreacted or that you acted wrong?
No, not that time. I just thought that he was showing off, you know.
Okay, and then you said... Right. Just before you get married, wedding rehearsal, Ken had not arrived yet, so my mother decided to have a private talk with me. She said that she had proof that Ken had been flirting with my brother Joe's girlfriend. I was shocked at what my mother said and didn't believe her at all. After all, he did turn down a beautiful girl like Gwen Marshall, back in the play there, to marry me, so why would he flirt with my brother's girlfriend?
You see how he used that Gwen Marshall?
Right.
It covered his ass so often.
But him just talking about this fictitious person.
Yeah, which I thought was real.
Convinced you so much.
Yes.
That helped you not believe your own mother.
Because
I could even imagine, like, put yourself in your mom's shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Your mom obviously wants what's best for you. And now she's having to go to you just before you get married.
I know that, yeah, yeah.
To say, and to come down with such a hammer of a piece of information.
And this was our wedding rehearsal evening too, I remember when she
days, people just didn't do that. No. They're not, so for her to go to that length, she must have been so concerned.
She was, I can see that now,
But you didn't believe her at all?
No, I know.
What do you think? Like
her,
at that point,
I thought she was exaggerating.
You ever get any other before you got married? Any other signs or any other warning signs from family members or friends to say, "Hey, maybe there's something wrong with this guy"?
My sister Rose was giving me some hints sometime because we had a country place. My parents, and there was one time I wasn't engaged to Kenny at the time, and my sister and I we used to go up the hill to watch the boats come in, and the sailors would come in. We would dance with them sometime. Just a dance. That was it.
Right.
And he found out about this. I forget how. And he came rushing down. It was a 30-mile drive. Screaming at me, running down the hill, came to the country place and said, "How dare you dance with these sailors? I was going to get engaged to you." And he told my parents, "What kind of a daughter would dance with a sailor?" And my sister Rose was there to say, "A normal person. We were just girls dancing with the boys. What's wrong with you, Kenny? There's something wrong with you."
Right. And that didn't click with you?
No. He ran off, got in his car, came back to the city. I wrote him a letter saying it was just an innocent dance, that I loved him. Came back to the country a few days later. We kissed and made up. So you see what a fool he was in the beginning?
Yeah.
He didn't want anybody flirting with me or me flirting with anybody. And
he's an absolute control freak.
Absolutely. 100%.
Well, you know, because you're going to project your insecurities on others, right? So that's what he was paranoid that you were going to do the same
thing.
That's
right. Yeah. 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 So okay. I did have signs like you're saying, but what did I know
at the
16,
time?
15. What did that's I know? It.
We were married September 7th, 1957. It was a very large wedding, approximately 150 people in attendance. My dress was so beautiful and Ken didn't look so bad himself. There, putting yourself over, that's good. I had so much love in my heart for him that day. I told myself that the other women in Ken's life didn't mean anything because now he was mine forever. So for you, signing on the dotted line, that was like symbolic for you. You thought, okay, once he would sign to be married, then he would stop courting everybody else? You thought he would mature and he would... Okay.
Oh, yeah, I thought that.
That's, yeah.
That said, he would totally respect me all our lives, and that was a forever thing. Well, that's what you, most people go into marriage thinking anyway. This is right. Forever. You love the person. You're signing a contract. But
you thought
God.
You could change him.
Yeah.
During the ceremony.
During the ceremony.
Yeah, he was dancing with this other girl, right?
Oh, yes. And this girl was, you might say, a floozy, whatever. She was okay. Noted as the town, sleeping with all the motorcycle men. And
okay.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, his parents knew her parents, and apparently she came along. And
at the wedding.
And Kenny, I looked over a few times. We were dancing with other people, and he's hugging her so close, I thought I would die. Oh, right away, I didn't like
that. But imagine.
I didn't like that.
You figure you're, you know, at least wait till the day after the wedding.
I didn't like that.
That wedding night, he's like doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, in front of you, your family.
So close. I thought they were going to make out in the dance floor. I was so upset.
So I guess that contract didn't last too long, huh?
Not on his way of thinking.
Yeah. We're going to end there for episode 2, which is chapter, I guess, 1 and 2. Any parting thoughts? Excited for your interview coming up?
Oh, very excited.
Yes. Book selling well too?
Very well, thanks to my daughter.
Marriageoftheseat.com is the website you can go to get all the information. Mm-hmm. Ebook, main book on sale. At this point, you order the book, my family delivers it to you. It's personal. Where are you going this coming? Is it this coming weekend or next weekend that you're going to be at Willebrod Church?
Yes.
Okay, and where? We're so done. What day, what time can they come meet you?
I think it starts in the morning around 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be there from 9 to maybe to 1 or 2, and even in the afternoon.
So St. Willibald's Church, if you're not sure where to go, go to marriageoftheseat.com. The Facebook page will tell you where the event is being held. Yeah, that's going to be it for this week. We'll see you next week, obviously, and talk more about your life.
Bye, everyone.